This is Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor is Astrid Clements.
We like debunking preconceived ideas about solo travel here on Solo Travel Talk. And your solo travel advisor, Astrid Clements, is just the person to do it. I'm producer Catherine O'Brien. True, false, somewhere in the middle? Let's find out from Astrid as we play a game we're calling True, False, Solo Travel.
Well, you know, Catherine is always coming up with some really interesting formats for this podcast. And the game type of format for the podcast, I must say, was fun to put together. So, Catherine, first of all, is going to pose the question. Then I will answer it either true, false, or maybe somewhere in the middle, or a little true and a little false. And then, during the show, jot down your thoughts. And at the end of the show, put your comments in below and let me know if you agree with my answer, if not, why. And we love feedback, so enjoy the game.
This is a prime listener interaction episode for you all, so this is great. Well, Astrid, let's just dive into it. We'll get started right away. First question. There are some cities, destinations, that are better than others for solo travelers.
The answer is a big true. Absolutely. There are many things, what I consider characteristics of destinations or cities that I consider to be solo friendly. And there are likewise these characteristics that are basically no-go solo destinations. So just briefly, some of the characteristics are the number one is always safety. Safety when you're traveling solo is so important, and you don't want to be going anywhere where there is too much inherent danger. You just need to travel to another destination. So safety in terms of, is there continuous or intermittent social and political unrest that could just pop up all of a sudden? Also, is a particular destination prone to natural disasters? Like in the South and around the Gulf of Mexico, you do not want to really plan a vacation during hurricane season here. And then also like the monsoon season in the Far East. There are a lot of different things, earthquake zones. You have to pay attention to those things now because they can affect a trip in a flash. I just read or saw on the news a couple of days ago that one of the big cruise ships had to divert their cruise because the waters got so choppy with Hurricane Michael. So it's probably behooves you don't book a cruise in the Gulf of Mexico or in the Caribbean during hurricane season. So safety in terms of natural disasters. Then you have cities or destinations that really are crime prone. And a lot of times these are places that have lots of poverty. So you want to really think about that. If you want to go there, you want to make sure that your plans entail to where you know you will be safe doing the things that you want to. But in general, if there's too much crime, really, maybe you might want to rethink whether you should go there or not. And then the last, in terms of real safety concerns, are your health risk. And there are a lot of places in the world that are not super clean. The water is contaminated. The food can be dangerous to eat. So you need to think about those things. And if you travel there, how are you going to protect yourself from getting the deli belly or getting really bad sinus infection? Like I went to China several years ago for 5 weeks. The pollution there in some of the cities on some of the days is beyond belief. So you have to know and be prepared. Take a lot of vitamin C. If you want a little face mask, a lot of the Chinese do wear them now when it's very, very bad. So health risks really are a danger to your safety, and you need to plan for that. And they definitely will be part of your decision-making process, whether you think this is a good solo-friendly destination or not. If there's a big outbreak, say, of Zika or whatever, don't go there until it dies down. Okay, your next characteristic that makes a destination solo-friendly or no-go solo are your logistical concerns? Really, there's so many places now that it's easy to get to. Plus, once you get there, it's easy to get around. There's a lot of different aspects to the transportation system that's easy. Is this destination walkable? That's one of the key things that I always look at, is how walkable is this particular city or this destination that I'm going to? Because if it's very walkable, then for the most part, typically it's safe. And then as a solo traveler, you don't have to get into the cabs alone. You don't have to do so much of the logistical planning to make sure you get from point A to point B, how you're going to do it, the expense of doing it. And it takes more effort to plan all these things. But if you can walk a lot, it's wonderful. Not only is it easier on your pocketbook, you really get to see the city or absorb the city more. So places also that have good metro systems, trolley systems, light rail, buses, even pedicabs, all that is really good for the solo traveler. So that's a very important characteristic that a lot of people don't think about. They just say, well, I'll just get in a cab. And true, you'll get in a cab, but there are some cities that I can guarantee you'll be more comfortable in getting in a cab or an Uber than other cities. So just keep that in mind. The next is the language barrier. Is it going to be difficult for you in whatever language that you speak in order to really enjoy a particular destination? Will the language be a deterrent? For English-speaking travelers, they have the luxury that most places now you can find somebody who speaks English. But then there's still places, like I just recently went to Cartagena, and it's a beautiful solo travel destination. There are not a lot of people yet that speak English, even in the different restaurants, hotels, sites, etc. So knowing a little Spanish or having a translator app, and they have all these devices now that you can just speak into, and the device will speak back, you know, the answer in the language. So language is not as big of a barrier now, but it still is. Say, take for instance, if you go to Russia and you're an English-speaking person, you really can't read the language, the written word. You definitely can't speak it. You can't try to say anything based on phonetics. You really do need somebody who speaks English to help you navigate, etc., so you'll be able to enjoy your particular travel in Russia. So I'm just using that as an example. Language can be something that makes a place solo friendly or no-go solo. Then cultural affinity. There's some cultures that you just feel more in tune with. And there's also a lot of cultural do's and don'ts that many people who haven't traveled extensively to different cultures and places of the world, they don't realize that in some places, if you smack when you're eating or slurp, it's horrible. But say in the Far East, China, Vietnam, if you're slurping your pho or your soup or you're just eating 90 miles an hour, they feel like you're really thoroughly into your meal and enjoying it. Whereas in France, oh, to eat, slurp, I mean, they take 2 hours, typically minimum, with lunch and dinner. They savor the food. They savor the time they are together with whoever they're dining with. So all those cultural do's and don'ts, it's very important that you understand it. And sometimes people just don't really mesh with it. So that can make a place for you more solo friendly or not. Then also just basic East-West philosophy. Those cultures are very different. So you might not be as comfortable in a place that is so exotic and so different. So that's another thing for you to consider. And then last, well, maybe there's two more, religious concerns. And I really hate to bring this up, but there are areas in the world that are much more traditional and their religions are very different from other religions that people practice. So you have to realize and be comfortable when you go to new places in the world that do not believe in your type of faith, that you're okay with it. Because some people really have a very difficult time with that. So you need to think about that if that's a concern of yours. And then last are the food concerns, which that's a cultural thing too, not only with the food safety, but there are a lot of different things that people eat in different places in the world that you would go, oh, no, or you just don't like spicy, red hot food, or you don't like certain types of cooking techniques. It makes you have a stomachache. So you need to think about, will that be something that will really make you not want to go to a place? The next characteristic, are there things to do there that you want to do? First of all, what are your special interests? Do you like gardens? Are you into art? You love the performing arts, music, dance, ballet, theater, whatever. Is there opportunities to enjoy the things that you really like at home, your special interests, your hobbies? I always look for those. I was a former music major and basically a liberal arts major, and I love the arts. So I love to go to museums. I love to go to galleries. I love to go to the ballet or symphony. And I always try to go out once or twice at night that I prearrange with my hotel concierge, make sure that I have a way to get to the theater and somebody to pick me up and bring me back to my hotel at night. But I love to enjoy entertainment in different countries and different cultures all over the world. That's my thing. But you might not like that at all. But seek to go to places where there are lots of things there that you particularly are drawn to. Another thing, two other things that I'll mention. Lots of people love to shop or they love to eat. Those are kind of the two, I'd say, universal things that most solo women travelers like to do. Some, in terms of shopping, want to go for the high end. Others want to do strictly ethnic shopping. Others love to peruse the markets and the flea markets. I like to do it all. So usually whenever I'm going somewhere, I leave enough hours, maybe a day or two, that I just am really there to shop. And I don't have to actually buy anything, which it's rare that I leave without anything. But sometimes I don't. But I love so much to look at different things and to learn. I'm thinking about Lisbon right now. In Portugal, they are known for making things from boiled wool. Now, boiled wool to me sounds to be real scratchy, heavy, bulky, and how in the world can you make this look fashionable or beautiful or whatever? They make everything out of boiled wool almost. They make dolls, they make coats, they make hats, they make pins, purses. All these different things out of boiled wool and very, very uniquely Portuguese, I would say sophisticated, and very nice, very nice. Something that you would treasure to buy. So when I was there, I really went into all the different stores and I talked to some of the salespeople and the shopkeepers to learn more about boiled wool. And I ended up buying a beautiful flower pin, a big one, that's kind of off-white, beige, and kind of a heather gray. Oh, it looks so good on my gray sweaters and dresses and even a coat. There's something about the way they do those boiled wool pins that are just striking, very beautiful. So if you like shopping, look at your destination that you're thinking about. Google, see if it's got a lot of good shopping. Because if you like to shop and it's not good shopping, well, you might not like that place as much when you come home because there was nothing to buy or nothing that you enjoyed looking at. And then, of course, the food. There's so many people now that really are understanding how wonderful it is to explore different cuisines. And some people want Michelin star or the real fine new fusion foods and the celebrity chefs, where those restaurants, that all of that's going on. And some people just love street food and they want to experience a street food. And then there's kind of in the middle, just the more moderately priced cafes, brasseries, and different types of kind of middle of the road restaurants and cafes that can be a great dining experience. So they're different, I guess, likes for different folk, but that can be something that would make you really want to go somewhere, or maybe go, meh, that's further down the line if it doesn't really have some good food. And I'm thinking about New Orleans when I'm talking about this. The food in New Orleans is enough to make you want to go if you don't do anything but to come there and eat, because it's fabulous. And then I guess I would say the very last characteristic that makes me look at whether a place is solo friendly or no go solo for me is really the overall trip cost. That can be super key, because you might end up deciding to go to a secondary city versus a big city like Paris, London, Rome, New York, Hong Kong. Those are big cities that are very expensive. But you might settle for Antwerp, Granada, even Lisbon. Lisbon is a big city, but it's not that expensive. But cities that give you a real flavor of the place and the culture, cities that weren't destroyed heavily during the war, places that haven't gone or experienced a lot of immigration, a lot of multiculturalism, places that still have a real ethnic kind of sense of culture and a soul, basically. Those can be a lot more wonderful trips than the big cities, because the big cities are so expensive. When you're worried about, oh my gosh, this cup of coffee is going to cost me $15. You know what I'm saying? When I could get it for $1.50 in Hanoi, and it's fabulous. Those are things that you need to think about. And then again, kind of Western and Eastern. Western Europe is much more expensive than Eastern Europe. Now, Eastern Europe's prices are beginning to climb, but it's still cheaper. As well as English-speaking countries versus your non-English-speaking countries. The English-speaking countries are definitely more expensive than the non-English-speaking countries. So overall trip cost can be one of those characteristics that can make somewhere this year or whenever you're planning a trip either solo-friendly or deal-breaker. So think about that. But basically, you get by drift. And what I'm saying is that places that are safe, that are easy to navigate with limited language barrier and lots of things to do that you want to do are great locations or destinations for solo travelers. So that's kind of how I think, Catherine, about deciding whether a place and even a destination a particular year, because it might change, but is, I think, solo appropriate, solo friendly, and I know I'll feel comfortable with being there. So, Catherine, that is a very long answer to a true false question. But the answer to that is very solidly a true. There are certain cities in the world that are much more solo friendly than others that are basically no-go solo.
You're such a positive person. I would hate to see no-go solo trending on.
Well, there are all kinds of things that catch you on fire and trend. But, you know, a lot of them just die out within 3 or 4 hours, so it's okay.
But it is definitely catchy. Okay, let's go on to our next quizzy question. Solo travel is age dependent. That is, it's better for some age groups, stages of life, than others.
Okay, well, there's no correct answer to this. It's basically true and it's false. But there are a couple of things that make me have to answer it this way. Because in terms of older people or people who are retired or seniors, whether they travel solo largely depends on their health and obviously their mobility. Like my mother, she has to walk with a walker now. So travel is much more difficult for her. Cruises are the only thing that she would consider that have handicap services. Las Vegas is still good because they have all kinds of handicap services, taxis, facilities. They can ride their cart in the big hotels, etc. So the mobility is a key factor for older people, whether they can or want to travel solo. Then also a factor is, do you have the financial means? For a lot of younger solo travelers, they don't. The older people typically have more money and they want to spend their money traveling. And seniors have more free time than most younger people. Younger people now are carving out the time, especially the young professionals that have the money to travel more because they feel like that is very important in terms of their career development and their education. But for the most part, they don't have the luxury that retired people do, obviously, and they can travel more because of more free time. But with that said, a lot of times their husbands don't want to travel. So they have to figure out, how am I going to work this? Will he be okay if I leave him for a week or two, whatever? So basically, solo trips are different when you're older versus you're young. And I'm going to go into a little bit of why and what and how we describe it. For older travelers, really, who are solo travelers, they gravitate to cruises. They gravitate to group tours. They might want to go on a wellness or spa getaway in a beautiful resort where they'll be taken care of. They'll feel safe. They have some bucket list destinations that they've always wanted to see or some exotic places. They typically like slow travel. They want to go to one place and just do a lot of things in one place. They also like learning experiences. Now, the younger people do too, but the older solo travelers, they want to maybe have a 3-week art class in Venice where they do a little touring during the day or they experience the food scene and they have an art lesson in the morning and do some painting in the afternoon. And then they do whatever they want in their free time. Senior solos, I call it like adult camp. They're looking for things. I mean, they're wanting those camp days again. But the younger solo travelers, they're more into adventure. They want to party. A lot of them love still the backpacking. And they are into what I call fast travel. 2 days here and let's go to the next city. They want to see all of Asia in 2 months and every major city in Europe in 30 days. I mean, it's like sleeping on the train, exploring a city the next day, getting back on the train and doing it all over again. So it's a different mindset, I guess you'd say. And some of it deals with, I guess, older people want to savor things more. They have a lot more experience. They enjoy things more and being in the moment. I think younger people, they just want to learn and experience and they just want a lot of adventure. So that's kind of the difference between whether it's age dependent or if it's right for older versus young. And I would say really both young and old solo travelers want to see the world and they want to experience the different aspects of the culture. Whether it's the food, music, art, street scene, gardens. They do it in a different way, per se, but they do want to do that. So that's very similar. So that's a true part of the question. So If you're in good health, you have ample financial means to travel when you're older. Solo travel is definitely exciting and enriching. And I'll never forget one of my muses, actually, inspirations for Astrid Solo Travel Advisor, my website and blog, and now this podcast, Solo Travel Talk, was a woman from London who I just ran into in Istanbul. It was kind of a funny meeting. She was getting off of the trolley, and she had to take a step that was kind of high down to get to the street level. And she saw me, and she looked at me. She said, "Would you hold my hand and steady me while I make this step and then help me across the street?" And she wasn't with a walk or anything, but she was a little concerned about her balance. I said, "Oh, sure, I'll be happy to." And I took her across the street. We were right in front of the train station. And she had a backpack on. And like I said, I thought she was like in her mid-70s or whatever. So I started talking to her and asked her her name and realized she had an English accent. And I asked her where she was from. She said London. So then I asked her, I said, "Well, are you here by yourself?" And she said, "Oh, yeah." And I said, "You're not afraid?" And she said, "No." I think she said this is like her third or fourth time. She said she loved Istanbul because she could sit out in the cafes and she could walk the streets, etc. And she looked at me, she said, "What do you want me to do, sit up in my apartment and rot?" And I thought, you know, she is something else. Here she is 70, in her 70s, she's got that backpack on. She's not staying at home in her apartment, maybe getting depressed. She is out and in Istanbul, eating at the sidewalk cafes, going to the museums or whatever she was interested in. And she was full of life. And that was so inspiring to me. I thought, she's not even with a group. She's doing it her own way. And I was there solo. So of course I thought, this lady is like birds of a feather. She and I really have something in common. But the fact that she was 20 years older than I was and still had such a passion and lust about traveling and then being there solo and just completely happy and free as a bird, I thought, that's really cool. So age, I don't think at all is a deterrent. I think most of all, it is your physical and your health that would keep you from it. And two, there's so many more options now for solo seniors to do. I mean, they've got even cruises and tours that are strictly focused on solo travelers, and some even more to senior solo travelers. So, Catherine, I'll just ask you, have I convinced you that there really is no right or wrong answer to this question?
Of course you have, Astrid. But also, I think you point out something very valuable, which is it's really about health and mobility. We know that that is what can stop people from traveling or can slow people down or can be a barrier to people traveling. So that's a good reminder. It's not your age necessarily. It's these other factors that go with it.
Right. But even with that said, there are different cruises now and tours that are created for people that are less mobile, etc. So if you have some of these issues, but you still feel comfortable that your health is strong enough, research those issues. In fact, that's probably a good podcast that we could do for people that do have some mobility issues or maybe some other minor health issues that they really need to be prepared that if anything would change while they're traveling, or just that they could be able to travel and feel comfortable traveling and still have these issues.
I'm also reminded of our friend Don Godshaw, CEO of Travelon, who was on Solo Travel Talk talking about traveling with disabilities. So there is a mindset piece to it. I think the setup for this question was really kind of thinking about there are times of people's lives where you have less responsibility or you have different responsibilities. So it can be sort of like a young person's game or a retired person's game. But I think you have covered it sufficiently, Astrid. Okay, next question. And there's a little bit of a story to this one. People feel sorry for you when they hear you are going somewhere alone.
Okay, the answer to this question, I think, is really somewhere in the middle. And it depends on whether these people are your close family or friends, or if they're just acquaintances. It also, I think, it depends on if they could see themselves traveling solo, or they enjoy traveling solo, or who have done it. Because I think most women who have had to travel solo have been introduced to it because they had to do it for business, okay? And because they had to do it, they learned how to do it, and they became comfortable in doing it. So that kind of led them to start embracing that as an alternative to a vacation type, whether they're married or they're widowed or they're divorced or they're single for whatever reason. So really, there are more people that are doing it now, and they're doing it and choosing to do it. So those people have a completely different attitude than, say, other people that have not. Like the more traditional woman, like a lot of my older friends, they go, meh. I mean, they don't know why I'm doing it. They think, why don't you bring your husband, Astrid? Or you don't want to go with some of us and blah, blah, blah. And I do. I still travel with my family. And I also travel with my friends. I used to play a lot of competitive bridge, and we would go all over to these bridge tournaments together. And I loved all that. But I also love solo travel because I can do whatever I want when I want to do it. And I'm a very intense traveler. I mean, I want to try to experience as much as I can when I go to a destination. And unfortunately for somebody like me, most people aren't that intense. So if we're all together, then I have to sacrifice a lot of what I want to do, which is okay for some trips. That type of person, they're not so convinced. They just think, oh my God, oh, that just sounds awful. Another thing to consider whether people think what they think about solo travelers or solo travel is once you arrive, say you're a solo traveler, and once you arrive to a destination, I think your attitude is all important or really critical, whether people feel you're lonely or whether they feel sorry for you. And it really comes across in how you dress, if you're relaxed, and if you have a confident air about you. If you feel comfortable, relaxed, and confident, they're not going to feel sorry for you because there's no reason for them to feel sorry for you. In fact, I have found they'll admire you and be very curious about you, and they'll end up kind of wanting to talk to you and get to know you. And this happens to me a lot. I was in Venice for a week, and I was staying at a wonderful hotel on one of the smaller canals. And every night I would sit outside and have a glass of wine. I would write in my journal or post something on social media, check up on what's going on in the world, etc. And then after about the third night, this couple who was always out there too, and we kind of stayed out there until almost closing time because it was so beautiful sitting out there. Why do you want to be in your room? And the lady said, I just have to introduce myself. I just want to tell you. She said, you are so cool. I have watched you every night, blah, blah, blah. So we started talking, and she told me they were from New Jersey, and this was the first time they had been to Venice, and all the wonderful things that she had done. And she was asking me about myself, and then, of course, I told her about the website, and then that made her think, oh, my God, you're even more cool because you're talking about it being here and everything. But the bottom line was I was so comfortable. I didn't feel like, oh, would somebody talk to me? Or I don't have anybody to be here with me, blah, blah, blah. Especially when I told her I was married. I'd been married for 40 years to the same man. et cetera. And that now I was doing some of these things that I had wanted to do and do it my way, and he was okay with it. Oh, that made her feel so excited. I could see her eyes rolling around. She said, oh, I'm going to be like that one day. I want to do some of the things I want to do. And I still love my husband and my family. So what I'm saying is it really depends on who's judging you, how you're acting. And another thing, solo travel really is, and not because I believe in it, but the statistics there, it is a hugely fast growing trend. I mean, there are more and more people that are doing it, whether they're joining tours or cruises, or they're going totally solo. I know lots of people like to go to big cities like Paris, et cetera, totally alone, just like I did in Venice for 10 days. Oh, that was heavenly, because I could go into all the neighborhoods and really explore, and I didn't have to rush here or worry about my daughter didn't want to sit here for an hour and a half after we've had gelato and cappuccino and just sit. She's ready to do something else, or she didn't want to go to this perfume place and all those kinds of different things. And another thing, and I talked about this in the previous question, it's key that you pick solo-friendly destinations. If you go places where there's a lot of family or romantic couples around and those activities, well, you might get some stares. You don't want to see her the same. What happened? Her husband left her or whatever. The last thing I'm going to say to answer this question is, if people feel sorry for you, just cop an attitude. And I mean that. You got the attitude that, hey, look, you don't know what you're missing. You know, the freedom to travel by yourself is for the enlightened modern woman. To be confident, be alive, and the naysayers will definitely be intrigued. And you just might influence them to just go solo on the next trip. And let me tell you, I might be laughing, but it is true. Yeah. So if you see any of that, just come. It works every time.
So Astrid, the secret root of that question was that you were telling me about your going on one of your adventures and that one of your own friends kind of had this sort of like, oh, felt sorry for you. And I was like, this friend must not know you very well, because I mean, of all people.
No, she couldn't see herself doing that. And she was worried about me. Maybe there was something going on that she didn't know. I mean, she was looking at it from her perspective. She could not bridge the gap just getting out there and doing your thing, because she's much more traditional. And when I tell you she's a lovely, sophisticated woman, she is. She's top notch. But she would never do that. And let me tell you, there are people that are like that. That's fine.
More on that in a moment. I'm interested to hear your answer on this one. Although I do have a suspicion of where this answer is going to go. But pre-trip planning is more important when you are going solo.
Well, Catherine, we've recorded several podcasts on this particular topic, so you know the answer. The answer is true, true, true. And in my opinion, it really is the most important aspect of any solo travel adventure. The more you research your destination and have specific things to do, see, and enjoy, the more wonderful your solo travel experience will be. You need to really do this. Some people don't have the time, or they don't take the time, or they don't think it's important. They think, I'll just get there and I'll ask the hotel concierge. But let me tell you something. When you're solo, basically, you know, the buck stops with you. So the more you can be familiar with what you're going to do, what you're going to see, even the way the people dress, the culture, all of that, when you get there, you'll be able to really kind of just slide into it. There'll be less of a culture shock. So what I suggest is anywhere you go, any trip you take, one of the first things to do, go buy your little spiral travel journal, or if you want to get a fancy one, and start doing research. Google information, read printed material, magazines. I love YouTube videos. Look at TripAdvisor reviews. Listen to podcasts like Solo Travel Talk. And also go to my website, Astrid Solo Travel Advisor, which is astridtravel.com. I've got great blogs on all kinds of stuff that is geared toward affordable luxury, solo travel, destinations, travel tips, etc. But as you're getting all this information, write everything down. Like if you find 5 key restaurants that you want to experience in a city, write those restaurants down, write the addresses down. Don't just read it and try to keep it in your memory and then you'll work it out when you get there. No, you really do need to write the address down, the contact information. And a lot of times, if it's a really fabulous restaurant, you've got to make reservations months ahead of time or you will not get in. But start making to-do lists, all the restaurants you want to go eat. What are the key shopping places? What are the museums you want to explore? Are there any gardens, botanical gardens or whatever there? Are there key sightseeing sites that you really want to go to? Entertainment venues, special things that you can do at night. Write all this down so you can start picking and choosing what you want to do. Also, not only do you pick the things you want to do in the day, but don't forget about at night, because at night, that's more difficult for the solo traveler. Typically, if you can't walk from your hotel and you know you'll be safe, you're going to have to get your logistics taken care of. But don't let that stop you from going to see a theater performance that you want to, or some wonderful orchestra concert that you've always wanted to do this. Don't let that stop you. Get the concierge to work out how you're going to get there and how you're going to be taken home or driven home after the performance. Lay it all out, put it in your budget for the trip, and do it. So you have to figure out what you're going to do at night. Are you going to stay at your hotel and sit outside and have a glass of wine or drink a cup of tea? And what are you going to do with your nighttime? Then also your downtime you got to plan for. I am the ultimate planner. What am I be doing during the day and making sure that I'm covering everything that I want to do. But I also know myself, and I've had so much experience. You have to have downtime, especially when you're traveling solo, because when you get too tired or when you start to feel that exhaustion coming in, and it will, every trip that you take that is more than 3 days, you're going to start feeling it. So you have to kind of pull back. You might want to go to the spa or get just a massage, or you might want to sleep late, or you might want to go to bed at 7:30 at night. That's all okay. Especially if you're solo, you can go to bed whenever you want to. So my point is you have to plan for that, or you have to have your to-do list to where you know that, well, if I had to not do this, that, and the other, these are the things that I wouldn't do. So you haven't wasted your time doing something that is less important, and you miss the things that are real important because you had to sleep late. You just couldn't do another thing. You just had to get some rest. So don't forget to plan for this, because I'll say it again, solo travel can be stressful because you're making all the decisions yourself. You're making sure you know how to get here, blah, blah, blah. So you have to pace yourself. And then you've got another thing that I like, or I think is very important with the pre-trip planning and research. You need to get you some good apps on your smartphone and practice with them, especially with the Google Maps, getting you from point A to point B. That's just so important nowadays, or whatever app you use. Then in terms of the language, if there's a language barrier, get one of the language apps and use it, or get some kind of little device and practice with it that helps you translate or will say things, phrases that you want said in their language. Practice before you go. Also, and I've done a couple of podcasts on this, the State Department. Go to that website, the travel section. Look at the country or the destination where you're going. Read the do's and don'ts, the cultural do's and don'ts. Look at the health concerns, the safety concerns. Usually they have a whole section for women travelers to certain, you know, destinations. It's great. Make sure that you've got all your visas and your immunization requirements done. All that is on the State Department website, their travel section. Fabulous, fabulous information. So do that. Also, some things that people don't do, they're aware of how much a trip will cost, but I advocate developing actually a budget for the trip. And I have a key on how much I want to spend. I take care of my fixed costs, like my hotel and my air reservations, some of my logistics, like to and from the airport, before I go, my travel insurance cost, the things that I have to pay for. I try to pay for those fixed things up front. So say if a trip costs me $10,000, I'm going to stay 10 days and my fixed costs are $5,000. I know I have $5,000 left, so I can spend $500 a day on shopping, eating, museums, entertainment, etc. And I kind of keep track of that. So if I blow whatever amount, then the next day I have to pull back. So I don't come home and I have this big shock on my credit card that I didn't know how much money I was spending. So getting in the habit of developing a budget is all part of this pre-trip planning that I think is so important for a great trip. Because if you blow too much money, you might have had a great trip, but it's going to take you 9 months to a year to get through it. You might not have done this or that if you had more control over what you were spending. And the last is basically, what are you going to bring? Packing. Using smart packing tips. I've got a great packing list that I share with my listeners and people who go to my website who can download it. But you got to pack for the climate. You got to pack for what you're doing and keep the concept of less is more. Me, I love clothes, so it's very hard. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm so into this packing wisely, because it's hard for me. And I've really had to learn the hard way that I don't need to bring all these kinds of things. Because if you don't have another sweater or you forget your raincoat, you can go buy a cheap rain poncho at your destination. You don't have to bring galoshes and all this kind of stuff. You can get what you need there if you forget something. The main thing is you want to bring what you know you're going to need. Okay, so the more you plan and problem solve before you travel, the less stress you'll develop along the way. Because the only real assistant solo travelers have is the concierge or maybe a friendly stranger. So when you're in a group, everything is easier, obviously. It's taken care of by the tour company or whatever. And you don't have those, what I call split-second panic moments. And solo travelers can have those moments. Even me, with all of the experience that I've had, almost 40 years now of this, if I don't plan real well or something and I think I'm a little disoriented, I can have a little split second panic moment. I don't panic, but I can feel that, ooh, it's like, I'm going to go sit down in a cafe or do something. Let me reorient myself because I wasn't really organized well enough. So with all of this said, I also want to stress too, go with the flow. I know this sounds weird after I've said plan, but let those out of the blue serendipitous moments or conversations evolve when they're happening. And don't stop them unless you must cut it off because something bad is going to happen, like you're going to miss the last ferry back to the mainland, which has almost happened to me before because I love to talk and I end up meeting all kinds of cool people. I can lose track of time very easy, as you can see in some of my podcasts. They get very long because I have so many things I want to share. But really, I can't stress the importance of pre-trip planning enough for the solo traveler. And really, there are several blogs and podcasts that I've done on this subject. So just go to my website, Astrid Solo Travel Advisor. URL is astridtravel.com. Very easy. And read those blogs or listen to those podcasts and give you some even more in-depth answer to this question.
That was a little bit of a gimme. I knew where you were going to go with that one. But anyway, final question. Solo travel isn't for everyone.
Okay. My answer for this is true, but a qualified true. And I say this because the ability to be happy when traveling solo, I think, is a learned skill. It's kind of like riding a bike or learning how to swim. Once you learn how to ride a bike, you're free. You can go where you want to go on the bike. But until you do that, you're afraid you're going to fall off or you're going to have an accident or I can't keep my balance or I don't want to learn how to do that or I'm going to drown. Just the thought of getting my head underwater, all the water's going to go and I'm going to choke, etc. And that's kind of what I think a little bit about solo travel is like for people who have not done that, okay? But usually after you've traveled over the years, say with family and friends, there's something that starts changing in you. You know the value of travel. And travel does change you. And then also, too, some people have the luxury, they experience some solo travel when they're in college, either backpacking or they have a gap year or whatever, and they do some of it. Like I know my first trip to Europe, I went because I was an exchange student. Well, I was on a work school learning program that was sponsored by Lufthansa, where I would get my German language fluency up to snuff and get some credits for that. So bottom line is I went by myself to Nuremberg. I worked at a German department store and I met the people that worked there and they were kind of my mentors, et cetera. But on the weekends, I would go to like Vienna or Salzburg or Zurich or a weekend at Venice, weekend destinations, totally solo. So that kind of gave me my first experience. I'd go by train. I'd figure out where I was going to stay in the hotel. I'd walk around during the day, go into some of the churches and museums. Didn't do a whole lot, but I did absorb a whole lot as an introduction. But really, I think for most part, and I've said this before, most people's first solo trips are for business travel. And it's either they're going to a meeting or they have some kind of conference or whatever. But once you break the ice and experience your first solo trip, each subsequent trip, I think, is easier and more enjoyable till you finally get just plain hooked. But solo travel really is not that difficult and it's not lonely. But I think the key is, again, pre-trip planning, knowing where you are going to go, how you're going to get there, what you're going to do when you get there, how you will get back to your hotel. All of those kinds of things help you feel confident and secure. It's like being at home. If you have to go to the grocery store, you go to the grocery store and you know how to get there. But if you go to a new place and you got to go get groceries, well, so the more you know how to do all the things that you want to do and what you're going to do when you get there and how you're going to get back, et cetera, then you don't have all of these unknown what-ifs or fears, et cetera. But I think the real reason why I answered this question with a qualified true is because I believe anyone can learn the skills or the do's and don'ts of solo travel. But there's some people in their personalities that I don't think are well suited for this kind of travel. They really would never be happy doing this. And then there's some people who are married or tied to somebody who they would never considering going without their spouse or a friend. First of all, their spouse might seriously object, but just the thought of it, they would feel like they were abandoning or being selfish, or they would feel completely out of sort. So it doesn't matter how much they learn how to do it. There's something about their personality, which is not bad, or the way they think they can't ever really enjoy this. And I totally appreciate that, and I understand that. But there's a lot of that older mindset that really is changing. There are mothers and wives now who realize I need me time to rejuvenate, to recharge, and retired couples. They're with each other 24 hours a day, day after day. It gets to the point where one of them might want to go somewhere. And I just want to share, it's okay. Some people cannot or don't feel comfortable with it, but it is okay, especially if you have that type of personality where I can do this. My husband will be all right for 2 weeks. I'll make certain that he'll be happy. So I can go do my thing and come back and we'll both be happier because he'll be happy to see me. I was happy to do what I wanted to do. So you see, life goes on. But I believe that everyone who wants to travel solo has really gotten to the point that they're ready to step out and go solo. So if you're almost there and you need a little more reassurance or inspiration, talk to other people who've traveled solo. Read solo travel books and memoirs. There's a lot of stuff out there. Google, read the blogs, read my blog, Astrid Solo Travel Advisor at astridtravel.com. Printed material and anything that will help you get the confidence that it is something that you really want to do and the value of it. With that said, I really recommend your first solo trip to be definitely to a solo-friendly destination that's easy, ideally close to your home, something that you're kind of familiar with. Maybe you've even been there with family and friends numerous times, say New Orleans, and you just want to go there and do it yourself. Go somewhere that you think that you're going to be okay while you're there. And then ideally, if you're an American or English speaking, go somewhere that's close that also English is the number one language, like Canada, somewhere like that. And then once you're kind of comfortable with this, then you might want to jump over the pond and go to England or Ireland, Scotland, and then you'll venture into France with the French. And, you know, Europe, there's English is widely spoken and it's written and you can read the menus in most places, et cetera. But start out slow. Don't just say, well, I'm going to go to Barcelona, you know. Well, you're going to be okay, but it's not like going to somewhere that you've got a lot more familiarity. There's going to be more culture shock and the more adjustment that you're going to have to do that you're not used to doing. Also, choose somewhere that has a direct flight. The less that you have to change planes, worry about your luggage getting lost, worry about connections, bad weather, all kinds of these different things, plane mechanical problems, they have to send another plane, all kinds of stuff. If you can get direct flights or choose places that have direct flights, that's definitely, I recommend that. Then also, when you choose your hotel, I try always to stay in 5-star hotels. I might go down to a 4-star, and sometimes the stars are different in different areas of the world, and they might get a 4 because they don't have a fabulous gym and all these other things. But still, the facility itself is beautiful, well-maintained, very authentic, in a safe location, in the right price range, and it has a great concierge service because that is key for the solo traveler. I lean on the concierge for everything to help give me daily directions on I should do this or not do this, how to get there, get my theater tickets, align this up for me, that up. They're great. And lean on those concierges like they work for you because it will really help make your trip go much smoother. I also advocate one city for one trip at first. Don't try to do too much. Just go to one place, whether it's for 2 days or 3 days and 2 nights or a week. One city. It's much better than doing too much. If you would want to do multiple stops, then you probably should take a tour, a cruise, or a river cruise, and let them take care of all the logistics, etc. Because if you're not used to doing it yourself, the thought of, okay, I have to get to my hotel, I have to go to the airport 2 or 3 hours before, then I have to change planes, I'm going to have a 5-hour flight, then I'm going to do all this in this city, then I'm going to catch a train to do this. All these different things. For a solo traveler who's not experienced, they can say, this is not a trip. This is too much stress and too much of a hassle. So if you want to do multiple stops, etc., and you're not used to that, tours, cruises, or river cruise, I definitely recommend. Now they have so many cruises that are geared towards solo travelers because solo travelers are becoming more and more part of the traveling contingency all over the world. So it's totally changed now. So Catherine, did any of the answers I gave you surprise you?
Not exactly, but you always give me something to think about. And I think that you've definitely challenged me to think a little bit deeper about each of these. And really, I think that hopefully the listeners got something out of that too.
And I'd pose the question to the listeners. Did any of these answers surprise you? If they did, or you thought I was spot on, we love to hear feedback from our listening audience because when we get this feedback, we really know what you're interested in hearing about, what is on your mind, maybe misconceptions. And all of this energizes us to develop different show topics that we feel like you're going to really want to hear about and that will be beneficial because we love hearing from our listeners. There is nothing that gets us more exciting than to hear from our listeners, even if they pose a very poignant question that maybe we have to really think about that either we didn't explain well or they didn't agree with or whatever. We love it. So please give us some feedback or if you disagree or whatever and you want to let us know. So I'll say goodbye today with, if you found the time well spent, give us a big thumbs up, share, and then most importantly, as they say in podcast land, subscribe. Because the more people who subscribe to Solo Travel Talk, the more our broadcaster will push out these podcasts to future listeners worldwide. So I say goodbye. And thanks for listening.
One more quick fact that is definitely a true, and that is this. If you're going anywhere, you're going to have to pack. True. So why don't you make it a little bit easier on yourself? Astrid has an amazing packing list. You heard her mention it here on the show. That's a way for you to get the packing list immediately for your own use. You just go to astridtravel.com, Astrid's website, and there's a place to download that packing list right away. Just make things a little bit easier. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, any of the finer places that podcasts can be found. Like Astrid said, we do love our subscribers. We love you for listening to Solo Travel Talk and giving us all that feedback. We do love to hear from you. And this is the perfect opportunity to shout out back to Astrid and Solo Travel Talk. Thank you so much, everybody, for the true, false, and somewhere in the middle answers on this week's episode of Solo Travel Talk. We'll see you next time. Take care, everybody. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk. Follow Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. To learn more about Astrid or solo travel advisors, visit our website, astridtravel.com.